Leah, I'm sorry.
Hi, I'm Natick. My name's Leah. And ever since they called me about this, I've been wondering why I don't think that the people on the committee knew me. Because I'm a pretty straightforward kind of person. But I wasn't always like this. When I first came to Narcotics Anonymous, I mean, I came in here sort of hostile and having been living in this secretive world of using and hiding it, and you know, I wasn't hiding it very well, but trying to hide it and thinking I was hiding it and certainly trying to keep it under the covers. And so I came to Narcotics Anonymous, and I finally, you know, got a desire to stop using and put down the drugs. But what came with me was sort of all that secrecy stuff and all this shame. Well, at that point, it was shame, because once you stopped using, then you realized just what a mess you really were. You know, and a lot of stuff had happened throughout my using, and I came in here, and I didn't really know what to do with it, and I would keep quiet and sort of sit in meetings and be very hostile and not really wanting to tell people. And I had a couple people that I would talk to, and it was things like, you know, when I was using, you know, I'd been married, and I'd had a couple kids, and the state came and took them away from me and put them up for adoption. You know, that's not the kind of stuff that I could come out and just tell anybody when I got clean, because I walked in here carrying a lot of shame, you know, about it, because before they put them up for adoption, you know, I was on a meth clinic, I was going with a social worker, they were in foster care, and I was still using. And I wasn't willing to stop using at that time. And I always tried to portray myself like I was this victim, and the state was like, you know, the big bad boogeyman was there, and they were trying to, you know, and they were messing with me, and I took no responsibility for my part in that I would not stop using. I was not done. You know, Narcotics Anonymous wasn't around then, or if so, it wasn't anything you could really find, because this was, you know, 1980, 82, and, you know, so I kept using. And when I got clean in 1986, you know, I came in here carrying all that stuff with me, and I didn't want to tell you that. I didn't want to tell anybody that. I didn't even come here really wanting to stop using. It took me going to months from the spring until the midsummer of 86 to actually get clean and find out that I had a desire to do this, because my using had always cycled, where I'd sort of switch one thing to another and I'd be able to maintain a little better, and then I'd say, well, this is, you know, such a mess, I might as well go back to that. And that's where I finally was when I called Narcotics Anonymous and went to my first NA meeting. And I came in using, and people would say, you know, we're about total abstinence, and I wasn't really willing to stop using. You know, and I started cutting back a little bit, and they say, are you clean? And I'd be like, no, I'm not clean yet, but I'm doing much better. I'm using less, you know. And, you know, because God forbid I go through withdrawal and be sick. You know, like that's the worst thing that can happen. So at one point, after going to meetings and sort of cutting it back a bit, I was willing to take that next step and say, I'm going to stop using. And I went and detoxed at my mother's, and I got clean, and I started going to some meetings there. She lives in L.A., and I finally came back, and I got clean. So now I'm clean, and I'm carrying all this shit around with me. And, you know, I just didn't know what to do with it, and I had to go ahead and find a place to put it. And I started talking to a couple people. I started doing some step work, reading the basic text, and what we used to do, and I still actually do, is we'd sit there and we'd take the first step and each word in it and sort of look it up and find out what each word in the step meant, and then write about it and how it affected us, because that's, you know, we didn't have all these books. And I actually sort of really liked it, because it got me to understand what is really the step, and you know, and what is our interpretation of it. And I learned a little bit about that, and you know, I did a first step, and I did a second step, and I was still very hostile and angry. You know, I'm not a big hugger now, and in fact, I chase the hug squad away from me whenever I walk in the convention center. But I really didn't want anybody to hug me when I got here, and they didn't. And they didn't, because if I give you the look, you don't want to come near me. And so by the time I got to my fourth step, I think I had about 3 years clean. And that's when I was able to We still didn't have the fourth step guide, and I really had a hard time because I did need some serious direction on how to write a fourth step. And so I just wrote a lot about, for me, my first four steps was very much about the past and all this stuff that I carried with me and situations versus the exact nature of my wrongs. It was very much about the situations and my life and my using and where the using had taken me and all this stuff that I was carrying around with me. It wasn't a real fourth step, but it was something that I then shared with my sponsor, and I was able to sort of, once I was able to say all this stuff to another person, I was able to sort of get it out of me, and I didn't carry quite the same shame with it because now it's not this big, dark, deep secret that I had to carry around with me. And because of that and being able to share it with her, it was something I could then share to a group, though it wasn't something that I would still walk around and share in a group every day. But if people are sharing about those kinds of things, or if I hear them share in a meeting, I have no trouble going up to them or to talk to you people here. You know, it's not something that I carry all this shame about any longer. It's the kind of stuff that I can say, this is where my disease took me. This was my part in it. I'm not a victim, you know. And these were the poor choices that I made. I don't have to make them anymore today. And since that time, I've been the type that pretty much goes around and my life's an open book, and I've had running battles with sponsees sometimes for years about, oh, don't tell anybody or don't let anybody know I'm doing this or don't do that. It's like, look, if you don't want people to know what you're doing, maybe you shouldn't be doing it, you know. And I walk around like that, you know. If I'm doing something, people are going to know it. There are no secrets in my life today. My life really is an open book, and I'm happy to have it that way. I think that it's a much better thing to be able to walk around, and if, you know, and I just believe in it that, you know, using everything was a big secret, and it no longer has to be a secret. I can be who I am today, and I can tell you who I am. And even when things are difficult or I'm going through rough times or, you know, there are some things now I'm sort of unhappy with myself because I'm not there for my father as much as I should be. He's dying. I'm not close to him. I've probably seen him 5 times in the almost 20 years I've been clean, maybe 6. And we're not close, but I've been there, and I've tried to support his wife. I've talked to her a lot throughout the last couple of years of illness and all of this. But, you know, I'm just not willing to go to New York and sit there and watch this man die who I was never very close to. And it wasn't – and that's just sort of the way he is. He's not a kind of person would ever talk to anybody, and I'm sure a lot of my reticence through using was through him. And my mother, she's very secretive too. It's just sort of like you don't tell people your business kind of thing. And I tell everybody my business, and I'll tell them yours too. Right in front of you. So, you know, I got no problem with that. You know, it talks about in the 12th step how, you know, we are each other's keepers. And I will go ahead, and if you're fucking up and you're doing some shit, you better not fucking let me know about it, because if I see you, I'll walk right up to you, and I don't care who's around, I'll say, why are you doing this fucked up shit? And everybody will know. You know, so that's just the way I am. You can ask anybody who knows me. I will tell. You know, I'll tell on myself, and I will tell on you. You know, and that's just the way it is. So as a result, and I actually have a larger circle of friends than you might imagine. So because I carry things that way, I really just don't feel that much affinity to the topic, and I don't know if they want people to, you know, tell you the flip side of it. I'm supposed to talk for a long time, but I'm not supposed to talk about my story. I'm supposed to talk about the topic. But, you know, I have to say that, you know, life is really good. When I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I really did not know what was in store for me. I did not want what you guys had. I just didn't want what I had. And like I said, I went to those meetings for those months to get clean. And then I started coming to meetings. And I was able to embrace Narcotics Anonymous at the 5th ABCNA convention in Norfolk, Virginia. And for me, that was the turning point in my recovery. I had, when I first got clean, I had just come back from my mother's. I had 30 days clean or something. And everybody was just back from the London World Convention. And they had such an air with them, and they were just walking on clouds, and I was going to go to the next convention. And for me, that's where the turning point in my recovery was. I'm a D.C. girl. I used in D.C. I got clean in D.C. I go to meetings in D.C. And I went to Norfolk, Virginia. And I'd been tied to D.C. for a long time because I'd been in and out. And I'd been strung out, and I'd been on different meth clinics and stuff. And you can't, like, leave. You can't go anywhere. So I said I was going to the next convention this crew went to, and it was Norfolk, Virginia. And for me, I was able to get a sense of what Narcotics Anonymous was that I never got in our meetings, because when you're in a small group of meetings, you see the same people and you hear the same kind of stuff. And while it's good stuff, it gets a little old, and you always sort of, you don't really see the big picture of what Narcotics Anonymous is. And I was able to get that when I went to Norfolk, because you had sort of city people there, but you sort of, first time I was really exposed to having bikers in an NA meeting, seeing these guys with their bandanas and their tattoos and all their leathers and sitting in a marathon meeting crying at like 2 in the morning, you know, and really see, you know, because they have rural people in Virginia and stuff too, which I'd never really come in contact with, and sort of people who are very isolated, you know, living maybe 2 or 3 hours from a meeting, and we didn't have the same kind of meetings, you know, strength that we have today, where even small towns had them, because I remember many of the people who were gods when I got clean with 3 years clean talked about have the only closest meeting from D.C. on Thursday nights was in New Jersey, and they went every week. You know, and these were the people that sort of led me in here. So we didn't have to do that when I got clean, but a lot of people did that kind of stuff. And so I was able to really see Narcotics Anonymous and just how diverse we are, and learn a little bit about the disease and how the disease had affected my life, and how it really didn't matter who or what we were, you know, but that the disease of addiction was alive and well, and it was everywhere. And it was in me, and it was something that I needed to treat on a regular basis, you know. And I was able to make Narcotics Anonymous my home. And this was at a time when, when I got clean, people in meetings would still tell you that you just can't recover in Narcotics Anonymous, that you had to go elsewhere because there was no clean time in Narcotics Anonymous. And it was a pretty universal thing. You would hear it in almost any meeting you went to. Somebody would come up to you and tell you you really needed to go somewhere else also, which was just enough to make me say, I'll show you. So I've never really felt it necessary to go anywhere else. But, you know, it's something that I feel like it's my home and my life depends upon it. And, like, people always say, are you going to go to Ocean City? And I can't imagine missing a CMP convention. At my first CMP convention, I had 6 months clean. And that was the first CMP convention, you know. And there's only a dozen of us or so that have been to actually all 20 of them. And for me, I put my recovery first, you know. I run my own business, and people, when it's time for me to go to my home group, I don't miss it for business. This is more important than that. You know, everything that I have outside of Narcotics Anonymous, I've gotten here. You know, I'm happily married, and we just celebrated 15 years of marriage, and I met my husband here the day he got out of a halfway house. You know, and it was in June of 1989, and he got out of this halfway house, and he had about 15 months clean, and he came to my home group, and we were married 6 months later, you know, and it's been 15 years, and it's been pretty good. It's really, to me, an amazing thing, you know, that you can come to Narcotics Anonymous really not knowing where you are or where you want to go, and by following the path of recovery and taking the journey, you know, that you can wind up in places. And, you know, they always do say if you make a list of what you wanted when you got clean, you'd short yourself. But, I can't even imagine, and I, you know, with the amount of clean time I have, I see my life only getting better, you know, and I really don't have a lot of drama or trauma in my life today. I have life experiences and things happen, like I say, dealing with my father and his hospitalizations and surgeries and everything, and his wife, who I feel very bad for, and, you know, it's just, you know, a lot of stuff. And now I'm getting to the point where I'm trying to get my mother to move to the East Coast because she's getting older and she's doesn't have any family left. They've all left California and her siblings have passed. And she, you know, and I'm meeting some resistance, but she's getting older. And every time I hear, she's sort of getting occasional medical problems. So she's pretty healthy. And I keep thinking, shit, she's way the hell out there. And, you know, and I'm close to her and I've been able to build a relationship and make amends with her. Even though we're not really close, I mean, I can have her come stay for a couple weeks and be happy to have her there, you know, and it's not like she will never get on my nerves, but I'm happy to have a relationship with her. And this is the woman that I OD'd in her house when I was 15. She had the ambulance come. I was unconscious for 3 days after they pumped my stomach, and they wanted to commit me to USC for a year into the psychiatric wing, and my father came to the rescue. And I was, you know, he was like, my daughter can't be in a psychiatric facility. And he brought me here. And so I really haven't lived at home in, you know, over 30 years. And we can actually be friends today, and I can talk to her, and we can have a relationship. And to me, that's a miracle, because nobody could have ever told me back then that I would have a relationship with my mother. And for me, I'm just so grateful on this. And that's why I'm willing to pretty much be out there. And, you know, there's a lot of things that I don't necessarily, I haven't come to grips with. I sort of wonder sometimes, like, what is the meaning of life? Now I'm clean and I have a circle of friends and I got newcomers in my life. And, it's, you know, it's a great thing, but sometimes I sort of wonder, what is the big picture? And when I go there, I can just mess myself up. You know, so I try and keep it sort of focused and remember the things that I learned in my first 90 days are what keep me here today. You know, I go to meetings regularly. I do service work. I have a home group. Most of my friends are in NA. There's only one small group of poker players that are not in NA that I actually really socialize with at all. And I managed to wind up with a group of half a dozen guys that I play poker with, and at a poker game that lasts 5 hours, a total of maybe 3 beers will be consumed. I just don't, it seems like the people that I'm attracted to, you know, don't find it necessary to alter their being using. And to me, that's, you know, really surprising, and I'm able to, you know, I can interact and feel comfortable in social settings outside of Narcotics Anonymous, but I frequently ask myself, why would I want to? There's only a few things that I do that are really work-related that would really take me outside of NA, because I feel the closest to an addict. You know, I know how addicts work. I know how they think. You know, all I have to do is look in the mirror to see the way it works. And while I don't spend a lot of time acting out on my defects today, occasionally they pop up, and I'm very aware when they do. That is one thing, that the longer you stay clean, the more aware you are. It doesn't necessarily change your behavior, but you certainly know what the hell you're doing. I'm able to be the person that I want to be most of the time. And for me, that's a real blessing to be able to do that. And I don't know that I really deserve it. I know that I've worked hard to stay here. I've thrown my time and my energies into Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I've given a lot of time. I've sort of backed off the last 5 years in service, but it used to be that I easily spent 20 hours a month, every month, doing service work and sitting in committee meetings and sitting and doing that kind of stuff. And I learned a lot of stuff there. I'll give service work a little plug. When I came here, I didn't really have a lot of skills, and I was a high school dropout, and, you know, I didn't know how to type. I didn't know how to do anything, and I had to learn how to type by typing up minutes at area service when we didn't have a secretary. I learned how to run a business meeting and have a meeting that I can now use in my professional life somewhat, because I sat through area services and regional services and world services, you know, and I was able to really learn a lot about Narcotics Anonymous, where we've been, and I don't know that it's always conveyed just how far we've come. You know, there's a meeting almost everywhere all the time now, all over the world. And, I mean, it's a fabulous thing to know that this is available to everybody. You know, any addict who wants to stay clean probably can today. And that wasn't always the case. And I'm really a grateful member of Narcotics Anonymous, and when I'm asked to share, even if the topic doesn't seem that pertinent to me, because I will tell you who I am, I say yes. And I guess I'll turn it over to Kevin. Thanks.
Now I would like to introduce our second speaker, Kevin.
I am an addict. My name is Kevin. I was thinking the same thing about the topic, because I'm pretty good at telling on myself. But I guess, like, looking at my story and, you know, it's like all it's totally like written in my story. I grew up in Southwest Baltimore. I used to want to hang out with like all the older kids, and I'd be like 11, 12 years old hanging out with kids. It was like 14, 15, and 16, and I had to want to be the part of syndrome so bad. And also had this side of me ever since I was so young that I just, you know, when I went to first grade and the teacher said, Kevin, I told her my name was Thomas. That's my middle name. For some reason, I thought my mom gave me a wrong name. Like, I didn't like it. You know, I just ain't like my name. And you know, I told the teacher my name was Thomas, and everybody called me Thomas. And I'd been in a lot of, like, different trouble by, like, hanging around people, and people would tell you to go do something, and you go do it just for sheer acceptance. And, you know, I was one of them type kids that, like, when I was young, man, I could take an ass whipping. You know, if a bully would come pick on me, he would just beat me up. You know what I mean? I'd just get up and walk away and act like nothing ever happened, you know? Man, I've been through a lot. This is my ninth time being at this convention. And, you know, I just drove down here. And a friend of mine's Corvette is like the first time I ever drove somebody's car. Like, he talked me into it. You know, I'm a space case. I was driving, and I ain't never got lost before. I just kept going straight, and somewhere I ended up in Delaware, like, deep, like, you know. And I had to depend on other people's directions to get me here. And I was taking, like, Route 1, 13, you know, 63, bear off, giving directions to, like, turn at the 7th traffic light and go straight past the farms until you get on Route 13. And, you know, but I made it here. I made it to a friend of mine named Jamie's. He let me stay here, stay at his place, because, like, I ain't, like, really that financially sound to, like, you know, go get a hotel this year and, you know, live it up. But I love coming to this convention. And just knowing I was coming here, I had this sense of relief that, like, everything would be all right. And, you know, I missed the first convention that I wanted to go to was in 96. And that's the first time I heard about it. And I didn't know what a convention was. I just knew these people was psyched about it. Like, they was copping, like, this shit's smoking. You know what I mean? I had this feeling, and I was like new in recovery, and I was like, shit, I want to try that shit, you know? You know? I'm down. But anyway, I got to go, and I was real scared and intimidated, and everybody was basically talking about recovery. Why won't I let you know who I am? All right, so I started, I got to slip a piece of paper where they told me I needed to go to meetings. And I started going to meetings. And this was in Baltimore. And I was getting my little slip sign. And I remember seeing this dude named Space at the meeting. And he was, like, chairing the meeting. And I was like, yo, Space, what's up, dog? You know? And he was like, you know, my name is Craig. You know, and he's like, you will get your slip after the meeting. Or somehow I thought, like, this dude is trying to run some shit. He's from the neighborhood. I thought he was locked up for 5 years, and all of a sudden he's telling me I'm going to get my slip. And I thought to myself that, you know, he was a sellout. He didn't represent the neighborhood. These people don't like me. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't really think I had a problem. You know what I mean? I thought the problem was when, like, I ran out of neck space. Like, I had to shoot myself in the neck. You know what I mean? Or whatever I determined as what an addict is. I started to really hit bottom. And I was about at the age of 21. When shit just really started getting hard. And I've been clean longer than I've used. Shit started getting hard, and I started, you know, going to different missions and shelters. And, you know, at the time, you know, my mom was homeless, and she lived on a park bench on Eagle Street. And I remember geeking on Kane. It was one of them days where I was geeking, looking at the gutters. You know, I was walking down Eagle Street backwards, looking in gutters for a nickel of cane, you know what I mean? Geeking, you know? One hand up my butt, you know what I mean? Like, and I see my mom knew. She was like, Kevin, what are you doing? You're on that shit, ain't you? And I remember saying, yeah, Ma, I am, and it's all your fault. You know, look at you, Mom, you're on a park bench, you know, you're sleeping on a bench. It's all your fault. I remember feeling so like, this is the fact, this is why. My whole life I have found amazing ways to place blames, you know. Look at my social environment. You know what I'm saying? I ain't had it, Dad. I deserve to rob your ass. You know what I mean? Like, you know, what way am I supposed to act, you know? Anyway, it's just all misconceived bullshit. And I did it early on, you know. I did it early on, and early on I learned how to, like, abuse my mom and my little brother, people who were closest around me. But I kind of found Narcotics Anonymous. This is crazy, isn't it? I have shared this a couple times. But basically, this dude used to drive in my neighborhood, and he used to like to pick up the young boys. You know what I'm saying? And I knew where the young boys was at that tricked. You know what I'm saying? And I used to trick, too, to get money. I did anything I possibly could to get money. But anyway, he was in a program. You know what I mean? He was clean. And for some reason, I could identify with the trick more than I could with anybody else. And, you know, I went away, and I started living in these missions and shelters and shit like that. I told myself my problem was my neighborhood. You know what I mean? I had to get out of Baltimore. And, but my problem, I could get high like once a month. You know, like, I remember telling myself, like, I just can't quit all at once. Maybe I'll just get high, you know, once a month. And, you know, because we lived in this shelter in Frederick, Maryland, and we went, like, every month, like, different people would have money, and we made commutes to Baltimore to cop or whatever. And, you know, I was going to, like, Bible study and all this stuff, and, you know, I was trying to learn about God and different things, and, for some reason, somebody snitched on me. They're like, yo, Jazzy's high, right? Oh, like, in my neighborhood, my name is, like, Jazzy. Like, that's my name. And I got the name because I used to write graffiti, and people didn't know who I was. They knew what my tag was. And they would call me Jazzy. Like, yo, what's up, Jazzy? And that progressed. And I became Jazzy, whoever the fuck Jazzy is. Because I'm Kevin I, and I'm Jazzy. You know what I mean? It's like two different people all inside the same brain. But anyway, the pastor, I knew they was going to give me a urine, you know, word got around. I got somebody else's urine, and I got one of them, like, 99-cent pearl bottles, cleaned it out, and, you know, I did the whole 9 yards. That dude's an anda. Now I'm just joking. Anda means no addict need ever die alone. Anyway, I pulled it off real good. You know, I had my finger on there, and I gave him the urine. I had this little jack-leg urine system where they test your urine right there in front of you. And I'm sitting there, I'm sitting with him. I'm like, yeah, I read the book of James yesterday. And, you know, I feel so good. I love to do that shit, man. You know, in Baltimore City Jail, my name is Javed Khan. You know what I mean? But anyway, he gave me urine. He's like, everything's good, you know, all that stuff. And then some fucking crazy reason, excuse my language, I told him that that wasn't my urine. I got high. And the outcome of it is to get my luggage together, all my stuff, you know what I mean, in the black trash bag. And I had got a whole bunch of numbers. This is funny, but I was in a place called the Shoemaker House before I got in this one place, and I kicked for 3 days. I'm vigorous. My dope habit. I was doing like 4 bags a day, which ain't shit. You know what I mean? I did a lot more. I had a, you know, a lot more worse problems, but I really, you know, I was kicking. And this new rule in these Maryland facilities, you can't smoke in the facility or whatever. And I remember taking, you know, taking that dump, you know what I mean, and telling myself, I can smoke. And the nurse called me, and she snitched on me, and they made me leave. I got one number, Big Titty Patty. She brung the NA meeting in. And I got her number, and I called her up. And she's like, hey, how you doing? We can come get you. The whole thing in my head is like, she liked me. I knew she loved me. You know what I mean? She's going to come get me. She's like, well, look, I can't come get you, but my husband's going to come get you. And if you could, you know what I mean, work with my father. He's building a shed, and I can help you get to this other place that I wanted to get to. So that happened. She came and got me. Her husband came and got me. Dropped me off with her dad. We built a shed for like 6-7 hours. She got home. She was like a hairstylist. And she drove me to this place in Frederick. But anyway, I'm going to bounce back, you know, real. I got brain damage. Okay, so I'm going to bring you back. So I snitched on myself. I'm getting my luggage. Everything I got was a donation. You know what I mean? But it's mine. You know how you like people donate shit? I work on the truck. I get the sword through, get my shit. You know what I mean? Fold. I bet you I can get that stain out. Press it. You know, that's everything I got. I ain't got shit. I ain't got nothing. But I had a number from a guy in a recovery house, and I got my first job in recovery. I moved in. I got my first job landscaping. And it felt good, man. I worked and I got paid and I lived in this house and I got my 90-day key tag. And I was so proud of my key tag. Everybody was going away for Thanksgiving and I wanted to go away too. I wanted to go to the neighborhood. I ain't been down there in like 90 days. You know what I'm saying? I want to go see my neighborhood. But my mom's homeless and she's in a shelter now. And I was having plans to eat Thanksgiving dinner with her at the shelter. And I had no plans of getting high. But I did not tell anybody that my mom was homeless, A, because they would think bad about me. You know what I mean? And, you know, I just don't want to tell nobody about me. I was just so scared that you would think less than me, you know? I was scared to share in meetings. I didn't know how to share. I share like I do now, but like times three. Like, I'm from the hood. It was like Jazzy times three. I'm real scared. I want to intimidate you so you don't hug me, you know? But anyway, I go to the neighborhood and I go solely to see my mom to have Thanksgiving dinner, and I see my man Scampi serving in the hole, and this dude, like, the stuff was smoking, and I seen everybody line up, like, getting their money straight, and then I'm in the line with my money, you know, and I'm copping. And the ironic thing is I picked up one thing from these guys. These guys said, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. So I said, I'm going to just do a half. You know what I mean? So I did a half a bag of dope, left the other half a bag of dope in the cooker, and you know when it crystallizes, somebody's going to find it. You know what I mean? I'm going to get somebody where I'm donating. You know what I'm saying? And I do it, you know, and I feel good. Nobody's going to know. Blah, blah, blah. I go to the house late. You know, I can't tell myself I know what's going to happen. Now, this time, I got 3 trash bags full of shit. You know what I mean? But I was in an NA meeting, and I heard a lady share. And I don't know what she said, but I just heard this sense of honesty. And she just, like, freed herself. And the guy gave out the key tags, and he was like, you know, it says, welcome on the front because you are, and just for the day because that's all any one of us have. Do we have any takers? And I remember thinking, fuck, I want to start over again. You know what I mean? I want to let everybody know. I was living a lie, you know. I'm so good at, like, living a lie. Man, the topic so applies to me. But And the ironic thing about it is the house manager was at the meeting. He was like, what's going on? Are you just renewing your recovery? And I told him, I said, I used, you know. He said, well, you know, it's okay. We're fine. You know, you'll be all right. But, you know, you got to leave. So I had a one number in my head that I wasn't going to call, but I did. And it was a trick. I called a trick. He was supposed to be in a program. But anyway, he picked me up and he let me stay at his house. I stayed at his house 5 days. He lived in Gray Falls. So he was rich. So when I get to Gray Falls, when I get to Fairfax County Detox, after living in this big-ass, gigantic house, I ain't never seen that many rooms. You know what I mean? That many baths. I could live in a bathroom. But they asked me where I live. I got to have a Virginia address. You know, I can't tell them I'm from West Baltimore. I had the address. And she asked me, was my name on the lease, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I told her no, you know. I just paid rent. She's like, huh, is this like a recovery? I'm like, no. She's like, Hunter, are you homeless? I said, no, I ain't homeless. I told you I sleep on a dude's couch. I ain't homeless, you know. Homeless is a motherfucker. Homeless. Real homeless. I didn't know that was homeless. I thought homeless was no abandoned building. You know what I mean? I thought that was homeless. You know what I mean? I almost got in a fight in detox, but something said, don't do it. You know, don't do it. Stupid. I mean, real, you know, man, sometimes I could do some stupid shit. But this guy brung in a meeting, and he was from Jersey. He was from Atlantic City, and I've been out there before. I cop because they get, like, the New York Dimes, and they sell them for $20. That's all I know about it. You know what I mean? So it opened my ears up to a story. And he brung his network in. He brung friends in, and he told his story. And I just remember really getting this sense that I could do something different, that I could live a new way of life. And his name was Kim. And, you know, I'll never forget it because it was the first story I heard that I just opened my ears up and I gave myself a possibility. Maybe I could let you know who I am. And, you know, that nice lady that I told her I slept on the couch, she offered to send me to Salvation Army. And I did it for the lady. You know, she was so sweet when she gave me my intake, and I told her I wasn't homeless. And I was literally planning to go back to dude's couch. I figured if I got, you know, a couple of days under my belt, he'd let me stay there, you know. I could kick it. That was really my plans. And my other plan was I wanted to get in Virginia because I thought that I would get a welfare check for having – I heard if you was an addict, you'd get a check. And that's my goal, man. I wanted to get me a check. I'm not lying to you. I swear. I thought I was going to get a check. I was not thinking about, like, working. I thought, like, it'd be nice if I could get a check. You know, people would understand how much of a bad problem I have so I can get my check. And I went to Salvation Army, and I got real involved with, like, everything. I didn't go to that many meetings, and I asked this gentleman to be my sponsor. His name was Greg Daviar, and he used to bring in Greg's group, and they used to call him Green Eye Greg. But anyway, he talked about this convention, and he talked about, you know, speaking and this and that, and I remember getting this feeling from him. And, you know, I'd asked him to be my sponsor, and he was, like, cool, and I felt like I was asking him to, like, you know, bend me over and do me up the butt. You know what I mean? Like, can you be my sponsor? He was so, I felt so funny, you know? Can you be my sponsor? It just sounds funny. And he knew, but see, he knew something was up with me because you only had to go to Greg's group 6 times. I went to Greg's group every time. You know what I mean? I was like, it's Greg's group. Let's go to Greg's group. He talked about Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't know. I still never understood. I'm still learning. But anyway, I called him. They had me on this list, this long-term list to go to this long-term treatment center. And I heard stories about wearing diapers and wearing cardboard signs and doing all this stuff. And, you know, at the end, I went to Brother Nate. Because my time was coming up. And I was like, Brother Nate, you know I got the Word of God. You know, Christ has saved my life, and I'm a missionary now. You know, I'm ready to carry the Word. And these people are telling me that I need to go to long-term treatment. And Brother Nate told me, if I want to keep God in my life, I better go to treatment. I thought he was the biggest sellout, man. I was like, I just gave my best God speech. That's what I do. Dude, at breakfast, I make sure everybody's watching me, and I bust out the slickest prayer. It's hard for me to do it behind closed doors. You know what I'm saying? I got to, you know, you got to know I'm on channel 2. But anyway, I went. I'm still learning about Narcotics Anonymous. I'm going to meetings. I'm dabbling in fellowships. I'm playing Twister. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I went to Sex Anonymous. They had Sex Anonymous. I figured I'll go get me some sex. I tried it out. It was at the Unity Club. They had every different club. They had every different, you know, Gamblers Anonymous, all kind of stuff. And it was a lot of girls everywhere. I wanted to go where the girls was. I mean, you know. But I didn't even know how to approach a girl. Without that dope in me, I didn't know how to talk to a girl. I know I didn't have to have sex with a girl. You know, I didn't know how to I didn't know how to talk to you. My whole identity was gone. And I had to redevelop who I was. Because I was young when I started using, you know. I got out of there, and I ended up moved to Dallas Corridor, and I started going to meetings. And at this time, they were I went through my first car workshop. And it was weird because they were asking me, how many votes on this at the meeting? And I was like, we got to vote? You know what I mean? It didn't seem like there was no save seats, like for dude with all the clean time or, you know what I mean? It just seemed different to me. Narcotics Anonymous just had this different feeling. And they told me that the basic text was written by addicts for addicts. And, you know, I just started hearing all this stuff. So I really become inquisitive. And I started asking around. So what's the deal with this NA stuff? And they were like, oh, you don't need to go. They need to keep it simple. So once I started hearing people tell me I couldn't go, I had to go. You know what I mean? I was going. You couldn't stop me. Man, I've been through a rough, rough 6 months. Maybe a year ago, I found out my mom had cancer. As I took her to the hospital, I went to her apartment. She just got this apartment. It's like a Section 8 because she loves Baltimore. She won't leave. She was living at my house. And she gets up and she just goes. She does what she wants to do. And a couple years prior to that, she was at my house living at the shelter. She was living with me and Gabe. And they told her she had breast cancer and she had her breast removed. But she didn't follow through with all the medicine that you're supposed to do. And apparently the cancer set into her lungs and into her spinal cord. And when I took her to the emergency room, she told me her leg hurt really bad. And I'm like, damn, I stopped bitching. You know, I'm at the house with her for a couple weeks, and that's all she's doing is bitching about her leg. So I said, I'm taking her ass to the hospital. She don't have a medical assistance card, so I had to go to, like, the welfare. We had to apply. Come to find out she had one. She just lost it. But anyway, I took her to the doctors, and in there, that's where she kind of stayed. But I'm so glad that I could be with my mom. And I'm so glad that I had the ability to make choices for my mom because I got her moved to a hospice in Awney, Maryland. It was so nice. And, you know, I ain't like tripping it. I love Baltimore, but I took her to the one in Baltimore. And then once I started, you know, once everybody was getting their meth and I found out people was copping and seeing medicine on lock boxes, and, you know, I was like, you know, I'm going to take my mom someplace else. You know what I mean? Because she was on, you know, a lot of pain medicine and all that stuff. And I wanted to be closer to my mom, too. And so I would go see my mom a lot. And I would tell myself I need to go see her more, you know. But I see my mom at least 5 times a week and try to spend some time with her. And she was happy. And God damn it, I didn't go one day. And I go to next. And I go see my mom like, yo, mom. You know, because I can't imagine she's going to die. Even though they don't say she got full-blown cancer, you know, she's going to die. You're in hospice. I'm thinking my mom's going to pull up out of this shit. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, and but I go see her, and she's not, her eyes are open, but she ain't acting right. And, you know, I get her to cart her off to the hospital, and they give her some shit, wakes her up. And I'm like, what's up, mom? You all right? She's like nodding her head, and I'm like, everything's going to be all right, mom, don't worry. And then they tell me that she done signed all these papers saying that they can't give her any more shit, you know, that this is the way she wants to go. And, you know, so I accept that. I realize that she's in a lot of pain. and stay with my mom. And it was so hard because all I could tell her was, okay, mommy, you can go. But if it wasn't for me having a cat and a ferret before that, I would have probably never had to deal with it. Because my cat died, and I had my cat so long, and I couldn't, you know, deal with, like, I can't deal with people. It's hard to let you into my life. You know what I mean? I'll let you into my life to, like, a point. That, you know, I got a wall that I might not never let anybody in, really, to be honest with you. I don't care how many. I got 10 years clean. I come to a realization that I can only change so much. This is who I am. I need to let you know some of the bad shit with me, like with the good shit. You know what I'm saying? Through this whole time, I've been living with a girl. She's got two kids, and we officially moved together, and like a month ago, I decided that I could place blame and, you know, go everywhere. I didn't want to be in a relationship. And we still live together. You know what I'm saying? Really, this shit should be at 12 o'clock at night. You know what I mean? I'm toning it down for y'all. So I'm going through a lot, and I'm telling myself, you need to, because I've been to conventions where I've sought, trying to see if I see any kids. I've just sought trying to get that thing, you know what I mean? Go straight for the cooter. And not go to meetings and not hear what nothing with nobody saying, because my only plans is to use this condom I got from 2 years ago. Am I, you know what I mean? It's my only plans. And I don't want to live like that. I'm telling you, it is a messed up feeling. Come Sunday, when you see everybody with a bunch of smiles, and you just did something with somebody you don't hardly even know, or, you know what I'm saying? Because that's the truth of my relationships. We meet one another after we have sex. All right, so now what's up? You know, we just had sex, you know? I ain't never met anybody like via email. We've been good friends, blah, 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 you know? But so I don't know what I'm going to do. But I know we're living together. I know she's got two kids. I know the two kids are in school in Virginia. They ain't the best place they can be. You know what I mean? She's got like a lot of opportunity ahead of her. So I ain't ready to be like, if anybody's moving, it's probably going to be me. But the hit is, she done found somebody. She done hooked up with him twice. She asked me if he can come over to the house. Why are you at the convention? That should crush me. Who gives a fuck? I broke up. You know what I mean? When you tell me something like that, dude, I don't know. Maybe it's me, but I gotta like accept that. And I'd have did the same exact thing. You know, because you know, hurt people hurt people. You know, you gotta make a mistake to know you gotta change it. You know, for me anyway. You know, because you tell me not to do something, I'm going to do the complete opposite. I still am. I'm still going to explore. Don't go over there. Don't look. I got to look. I got to go over there. You just told me don't. I have to. I met Leah at, I became area service alternate. I went to area service. I found out what service was about. I'm not a big service junkie. I try though. You know, I mix like, you know, like, I wanted to get the full effect of Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, and I learned, you know, I'm the first, you know, official, I don't know, I was a regional chair, but I wasn't the best. I was maybe the worst. You know, they gave me the award. But I was, and you guys nominated me. And that's the beauty about Narcotics Anonymous. My life has changed to the point where, like Leah, I identified with her because when I first got my job, I wasn't going to give it to no goddamn bank because they didn't know who the hell I was. I kept it. I hid it. You know, I had like maybe 5 weeks, most money I ever had stacked like this that was mine. I had a nice stack of money, and I gave it to the bank people. You know what I mean? I learned how to drive. I lived in a recovery house. I called we'll teach you how to drive people. They taught me how to drive. I bought a car. I got insurance. I drove my new 1982 Volvo wagon to this convention. So happy. All was mine. Dude, I got Earl Shives of painted gold. I got like the 92 hubcaps. You know what I mean? I was hot. You know what I mean? I had like glued the little rips and cleaned it immaculate. So proud. So happy. So grateful. Because I cannot believe it was mine. I spent my whole life getting other people to do for me what I didn't have to do for myself. In Narcotics Anonymous, I remember when Lee was talking about, I'm going to do something new. I'm going to go into real estate. Now, this is before y'all found out, if anybody, homeowners, that their house just jumped all that money. You know what I mean? But she's like a real estate agent now. I've witnessed people change. Right now, I got electrocuted, and I was in a hospital. I'm serious. I got whacked, dude. I got hit me with 13-2. But anyway, I don't work. What I do now is I have been given a God-given talent, which is art. And I do work on canvases. And I'm a little ghetto at it. I went to the gallery in Georgetown with all like about 9 of my canvases saying, hey, can I show these? You know, I'm still learning how to present myself as an artist. You know, slides. I got to meet more artists. I got to do more things. And I've did a lot of different shows, and I've been in the Post a couple times. And I just got accepted into a new show in Bethesda via email. Like, I emailed with these motherfuckers. Yeah, the price is $800, you know. And then I called him up. I was a little hesitant. You know how you're waiting. I'm like, hey, so what's the deal? Am I going to be in the show? Blah, 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 blah. I'm really scared. You got to let me know something. I gave him one of them emails. And he was like, we'll let everybody know the such and such date. Real professional. It's hard for me to act professional. But he emailed me and told me that I was picked for the show. That I was one of the members picked for the show. But, I mean, that's a small thing. That's like if you apply yourself into anything. If you apply yourself into getting somebody else to do something for you, it's probably going to happen. If you apply yourself to do what you want to do, you know what I mean? You can do it. People get BAs, Ds, masters, all kind of like lives change. You know what I mean? Not just the cars, like the inside. Like I've seen some angry ass people just change. I've witnessed change. The miracle of Narcotics Anonymous happening in people's lives. And I've even had people come up to me and say, man, you really have changed. Not recently. But I remember that having like 3 or 4 years. And somebody says, man, you really have changed. Because the change happens so subtly and a change that you don't see the change in yourself. You know what I mean? I see it in everything else. I see it when I take chances. You know what I mean? When I try something new. You know? I was totally convinced when I was in Salvation Army that I need to like get rid of all my music. I started listening to like Mozart. You know what I mean? Any cassette that I would be throwing away in the trash, I would like save and listen to. And I developed a more broader experience of like, I still love hip-hop music. You know what I mean? But I like Steely Dan. You know what I'm saying? It's amazing because I just opened my ears up. When I was in Salvation Army, I had earphones on. I came out the meeting, I put my earphones on, and I did like this at the meet. And I just watched people. I didn't talk to nobody. I didn't know him. I didn't. And if your ass drove to a meeting, I thought you wasn't an addict. Because I ain't ever met nobody that had a car that had a problem. You know what I mean? But that's just so phony. Because I've witnessed people with so much money. And what I would think, like, I would think marijuana wasn't a drug. Marijuana's crippling. Anytime I need something to alter or change my mood to identify who I am or to make me cope with life, something's wrong. You know what I mean? And I can't evaluate somebody else's pain. You can't, you got to walk in my shoes. If you're going to judge me, and I'll drop dime on myself because I hurt so bad when I tell somebody something, somebody else finds out, then I hear about it in the meeting, what I did. So I'd rather just tell myself off the top. And if I don't, and you are talking about me, I can't hate you because I did something I wasn't supposed to do. You know what I mean? For real. So I try to stay away from getting in other people. You know, I'm in the traditions, applying them to myself. That's their shit. It ain't none of my business. Because once I start taking on other people's shit, my shit gets a lot, you know, I get a lot of shit. And I get affected by a dude over there, the way he acts in a meeting. It bothers me. I've let go of resentment. I used to live with somebody in recovery, and I lived with him. He had a substantial amount of time or whatever, and I thought he was supposed to act an X amount of way, and I just developed resentment. And what I did was I just never talked to him. Never, you know, I see him at the meetings, and I mug at him, and I wouldn't look at him. Because I didn't like him, you know what I'm saying? And it came time for me to make amends. He was on my list, ironically enough. Why? Because I spent 5 years badgering the shit out of him. I did what he did to me times three probably. You know what I mean? And, you know, I learned this too. Because, like, when you got a resentment, you come up to somebody like, that motherfucker's fucked up. They did this. They did that. And if the other person's, like, listening, you hear the resentment. Oh, you want to get away from it. You're like, oh, shit, that's resentment right there. I want to get the fuck out of here. You know, you don't want it to, you know, jump on you. That's the way I was, man, walking resentment. With this one person, one topic, you could totally change the person who I was. And I learned how to make amends, you know. I learned how to make amends with my mom. My mom was making amends with me, and I didn't even know it. Never had my ears open to it. You know, my whole life, I realized that I had the best upbringing that anybody had. You know what I mean? My mom did a swell job raising me. I mean, look at me. Now, we are in a Narcotics Anonymous convention. No, but I mean, I'm somebody today. I feel good about myself. I wake up and I don't tell myself that I have to be somebody else to be accepted. I'm down for, like, doing a new radical thing. If I start wearing my belt around my head, I bet you I can get somebody to do it. Like, why has he got his belt around his head? Damn, he's got his belt around. I'm going to give me one of them belts. It's the way shit happens. If you be yourself, man, you know, I spent so long trying to be other people that, you know, I'm still trying to figure out who I am. You know, I'm grateful for leading. I can talk my ass off, so. How many? 20? Oh, shit. Yeah. I'm going to have to tell you somebody else's story. Nah. Now, I got more. It's just like you wait. You know what I mean? Don't think. Don't like, what's he going to say? You just, you know, just chill. Things, like in my life today, compared to, like, if I writ all the gifts, I've been totally short. But here's, like, some of the gifts that are just the willingness to open up. Now, I still have that wall. Like, when it comes time to me say, I'm a hurt little boy, I just need to be hugged, I need somebody to pay, I love attention. You know what I mean? I say this, I don't hear nobody say it, but I love hearing myself talk sometimes, man. You know? I don't love hearing myself. It's a little broad, but, you know, sometimes I'm talking to me instead of you. You know, that's my ego. Yeah. Hey, ain't that many people going to admit that to you. This might be the first and only time you hear somebody say it. Because it's ego crushing when you do some shit like that. Now that was a real pause right there. All right, I told you about my ferret. I had a little ferret, and my little ferret died. But anyway, I had this ferret for so long, and I got this. This is how I got the ferret. When I got out the hospital, it was all ripped up in bandages, and the nurse had to come change my bandages. And this dude named Danny dropped off his ferret that I was supposed to take care of while this girl was in treatment for 30 days, which she just left. But anyway, I let the little ferret out of the cage, and the little sucker just ran off. And I'm all, like, broke up, like, wrapped up. I couldn't catch the little thing. And so it just lived in my walk-in closet. I had, like, a subwoofer in there. Her name was Crystal. Like, for me, animals have helped me open up to humans, you know, because I can forget to put the water in there, and I still get that unconditional love from my pet. And I started realizing I was getting the same thing from used people. Because a lot of times I'll go up in my head imagining what other people were thinking when I'm not taking the time to, like, think about what I'm thinking, you know? And I used to think I had the ability to read people's minds, you know? I always thought I knew what you were thinking, and 9 times out of 10 it was about me. And today I know that's not true. All right, it says 5 minutes, but I'm going to make it 1 minute. Narcotics Anonymous has saved my life. by his people, by the 12 steps, and by the 12 traditions. When I apply them to me, you know, that means I don't steal nothing. I got to pay my way. I can't talk bad about you. Sometimes I break the traditions when they, you know. But I'm grateful to be alive. I'm grateful to meet people that's dealt with death and recovery and different things so I can learn to, you know, do it. Different people dealing through relationships. Everything that I needed to know, I've heard in Narcotics Anonymous from somebody else. Ain't anything I ever said was original. If you're new here, you know, just keep coming back. And that sounds funny, like keep coming back. I mean, try, because I thought when I first started coming around, I got people's numbers, and I'd be like, hey, what's up, man? Can you come pick me up for a meeting? Oh, no, not this time. And I said to myself, they're supposed to help the newcomer. They're supposed to come pick me up. You know, how dare them? Then I would do this shit. This program sucks. They don't want to help nobody out. They don't want to do nothing. But you know what? If it wasn't no dope on Lombard Street, I went up to Fayette Street. I went and got my shit. I would hold out. I would wait. I'd be sick for 5 hours, wait and make sure I got some good-ass shit. The same thing applies in recovery. You know, I got some numbers. I got to get some more numbers. I got to meet some people. I got to start to identify. And that's exactly what I did. And I'm so grateful I took a chance to let you into my life. And thank you so much for letting me into yours. I'll keep coming back.